This is F. Bron McCash, the Swordmaster for the Highlander television series, and you are listening to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 31 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On the show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, audiobooks, games, special events, and Blood of Kings Highlander TV series episode fan picks, and more. I'm Kevin, your Blood of Kings host. I do this alone, all by myself, because there can be only one. All by myself, my show, there can be only one, just here by myself doing Highlander stuff.
Master, I have brought you your cheese pizza, hot and fresh for you.
You know I like the cheese.
I know you like the cheese, hot and bubbly, just like you wanted. And if it's not hot, I will make it hotter for you.
Yes, there can be only one.
I will go back. I will heat these with a magnifying glass when the sun is on high, because I love you so much, Master.
I am the Master. There can be only one. I'm kidding. I am one of your Blood of Kings hosts. You know I don't do this alone. There can't be only one here. I need my fellow immortal brother and fellow Highlander aficionado with me, of course, is my good friend Norm. How are you, man?
I am good. And why am I talking like Lopan in this segment? I don't know.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, man, I'm watching Big Trouble in Little China.
I think I've actually, well, here's in all honesty, in full disclosure, David Lopan and I actually dueled at one point in time. I took his head and his quickening, which is why his essence is in me. Right,
okay,
now.
I got a question for you. You know how I have that Kevin immortal quickening scale, you know,
yes,
with one being like, you know, Katana and 10 being Mythos.
Yes.
Where would Lopan be on that?
Oh, it can't even be measured. It can't even be measured. He is beyond.
Do you need a green-eyed woman for that?
Absolutely. No, you need two green-eyed women for that.
Well, Norm, this is a very special episode of Blood of Kings because it is inspired by our fans.
Mm-hmm.
And our show topic is Vince Stefanelli's Highlander TV series fan pick, the episode Mortal Sins.
Yes,
and
it
how
is.
Did this happen, Norm?
Well, here's the great thing about our fan community on Blood of Kings on our Facebook page, because we have been doing a bunch of shows on Highlander the Rules, and we've been doing our own commentaries. And Vince, he actually really enjoys our commentaries. So on the page, he recommended to us that we would try and tackle one of the, I guess it's not really in the top 10, but it is a very good episode, Mortal Sins. So he requested that we would do a retrospective, as we did with some of the movies and some of the episodes already, and a commentary for this. So, Vince, thank you so much for this recommendation, because it really, really is a fantastic episode and challenges a lot of what we've been talking about recently here on Blood of Kings.
Yeah, it was neat, too, because he said in the post, he's like, you know, I'm not going to pick Four Horsemen or a bunch of these other huge fan picks. He's like, I'm going to pick my favorite episode. And that's what he chose. And I thought that was a great episode. It was funny when he first said, I'm like, Immortal Sins. Oh, that's the one with the Nazis and in World War II. I was like, yes, that's right, with the kid and all that kind of stuff. So thank you, Vince. Really, really appreciate your participation. And we're looking forward to doing the rest of this episode. And highlighting Mortal Sins. But before we do, we got to get into a quick little announcement here, Norm.
Yeah.
As of this recording date, March 6, 2017, Blood of Kings Highlander Fandom Group has reached 1,000 members.
Yeah.
A very timely achievement as we also approach our one-year anniversary of the Blood of Kings podcast and the Blood of Kings Highlander Facebook fandom group. Dude!
I know. I'm so excited. It's hard not to jump through the microphone right now and just shake hands with every single person who has been along with us on this journey. But I think that we can celebrate this in a much more appropriate place.
Agreed. I say we head on over to Cheeseland, otherwise known as Joe's.
I think that's a fantastic idea. Cheeseland. Let's go to Joe's.
All right. Hey, Joe's back playing. Looks like he's getting ready for the gig this Friday night. Looks like he's working with some other bass player. That's pretty cool.
Nice. Is he working with a bass player now?
Yeah, that's he's working cool. with a bass player. Yeah. Good. Nice. Just I love seeing him bust out the different guitars. He always has a Fender, of course, but every now and then he'll bust out a Les Paul and a Gretsch. I love that. So,
nice.
So I'm a little hungry. Of course, I'm going to go for a Philly cheesesteak. Kind of feeling that right now because, you know, there's cheese.
That sounds so
and,
good.
I'll see if you I want to go back to my I love a black and tan. Give me some Bass and Guinness there. What about you? What are you going to have here, Joe's?
Well, you know, I think that I'm going to challenge Mikey behind the bar and see if he can pull out some really good Islas for me. So I would like a Lagavulin 16 and keep that running. Put that on Joe's tab.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, it's a fantastic single malt from the Islay area, which is the southwest region of Scotland. And it is really well known for that particular region for these really great kind of sea salty, minerally kind of flavors that go into the whiskeys. Also, because there aren't really any quote unquote standing forests in Scotland, the peat there is kind of a combination of decomposed like seaweed, algae, all that kind of stuff. And that is dried and put into a kiln, and then they smoke the barley with that.
Huh. I'm wondering if it's possible for Joe to make some haggis. Because, you know, as I had my first haggis when I was over in Scotland recently, I'm wondering if... are you allowed to make that here in the States?
Haggish? What is haggish? She's stomach stuffed with meat and barley. And what you do with it? You eat it. How revolting.
So, hey, dude, it is the 35th anniversary of the USA theatrical release of the original 1986 Highlander film that started it all.
Did you say 35th or 31st?
31st. If I said 35th, it might sound like it. No, it's the 30. It's a 31st. Yeah. Starting tomorrow, which is the 7th.
Yeah.
Dude, and this time last year, we were recording our audio commentary of the original Highlander film, which you can find on Blood of Kings. I did a post there as well. So.
That's right. So Kevin calls me up. He goes, hey, dude. It's the 30th anniversary of Highlander. Do you want to do a show? I'm like, yeah, dude. It's like 6:30 in the morning, but I'll do it.
That's right. You rolled with that, man. It was like all of a sudden you're like, we got to do this. We got to get it out for tomorrow. So, yeah.
So much fun. I can't believe that was a year ago. Wow.
Dude, I know. Yeah. So, let's give a little happy birthday to Peter Davis. His birthday was on the 2nd of March.
Absolutely. Peter Davis, one of the half of the producing team that brought us Highlander.
That's right.
You know,
that's
and
right.
Rest in peace, Bill Panzer, you know, who passed away several years ago.
Yes. Rest in peace, Bill. Will always be remembered.
Absolutely.
So, hey, you have a contest winner announcement.
That's right. We have actually picked a winner of the Raven contest. Now, earlier on, several shows ago, we started this contest because we did a show on the Raven, the pilot episode, and then we asked you to submit your story about why you love the Raven series in total. So we have picked a winner. Kalel Skylander, who is a friend of ours on the Blood of Kings Facebook page.
Great name, by the way.
Kalel Skylander, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And he wrote in to us, as did several people, and we actually chose him as our winner because the requirement was for this contest was to write in to us, let us know what you loved about the Raven in total, not just the pilot episode, but the series as well. And he wrote in, and I quote, I love the Raven. I own the series and rewatched with each Highlander viewing. I love that it's an extension of the Highlander universe. And I love the character of Amanda. Here's a woman that actually reminds me of Connor. She is still the hero, but not the one rushing in to save everyone in an attempt to police people and feel the need to protect everyone like Connor did. Also, quite frankly, Elizabeth Grayson is sultry and captivating every time she is on screen. She makes Amanda come to life, and you believe that is who she is. Even when the scripts are not up to par, Elizabeth still sucks you in along with her. You can't help but both like and fall in love with her. The Raven is great because we get more Highlander. The Raven is amazing because we get Elizabeth Grayson. And that is always a good thing. And I couldn't agree with you more.
Oh, totally agree. He's right about even if the script wasn't quite there, Elizabeth was radiant on the screen.
Yes.
And she was her character, and she brought a little bit of herself to, you know, Amanda as well. And just always fun to watch on screen.
Yeah. You know? So thank you, Kal-El Skylander, for writing that in. And thank you for everybody who wrote in for the contest. And thank you to Dennis Schaffstall for donating the complete season one of The Raven for our contest. So we will make sure that we will get that out to you, Kal-El, as soon. That's really cool saying Kal-El out loud.
I know, right?
We will make sure that we get that DVD season to you. And thank you again for your support on Blood of Kings, because you have written so many really great feedback posts on the forum.
Yes. A quick sword experience update. We wanted to let people know that Salt Lake City has added another date. So there's going to be March 17th at Salt Lake City Comic Con, and now March 18th. At Salt Lake City Comic Con. And in related news, that will also be appearance with Mr. Christopher Lambert, the Highlander, only on Saturday, though. He's going to be there. And there's some opportunities for pictures and autographs. And I think there's also working on a co-op photograph with Adrian Paul. But it looks like he does have his one panel, and that's on Saturday, March 18th from 2 to 3 p.m., and he'll be doing his autographs and photographs either before and after that. So make sure you check out Salt Lake City Comic-Con Fan X 2017 for more information on that.
Let me ask you a question here, Kevin. You've been to a lot of conventions. You've run.
Yes, I have.
You've run conventions when we were with Decipher.
Yes.
Who do you think... Who do you feel when you walk up to, say, the autograph booths area is a little bit more intimidating to walk up to? Adrian Paul or Christopher Lambert in this context?
I would say Adrian Paul.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, that dude's still in shape for his age. And you know he can use a sword.
But you came in with Endgame.
With Highlander. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's still that mystery, though, with Christopher, because he hasn't done a lot of appearances. But for me personally, I would love the opportunity to go up and see Adrian again and go up and introduce myself to Christopher. So.
You know, it would be super cool if they actually recreated that very famous pose of as Duncan MacLeod and obviously as Christoph as Connor in that crossed swords pose.
Right.
That they did that promotional pose for the TV show. I think
what I would love to do is get a co-op picture with him, but I would play the Slan Quince part saying, no, 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 no. My challenge was with Duncan.
I don't know who you are.
Back to the sword experience. On April 8th, Salem, Oregon. April 30th, Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. And then on May 12th, Cheyenne, Wyoming, the Cheyenne Comic Con. And there's the two New Zealand dates, May 28th and June 3rd. And in Knoxville, Tennessee on June 24th. And then the Sacramento SAC Anime Con, September 2nd. So stay tuned for more information. Adrian is a busy, busy guy. So,
By the way, if anyone wants to sponsor either Kevin or myself to go to New Zealand, we are available whenever you would like to do so.
I fully support that. You've been there before. Didn't you do like a Lord of the Rings tour there?
Yes, I have. Actually, you sent me my Fierce t-shirt.
So I could wear
that in New Zealand. Kevin, obviously, you know, he worked for Decipher during the Lord of the Rings trading card game phenomenon. And there was this great shirt. Fierce was one of the catchphrases for the trading card game. And I begged you for one of those shirts because you could only get one of those.
That's right.
Yeah. I'll go way back with you, brother.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of conventions, the Highlander 25th anniversary convention, the anniversary of the TV show, is Friday, October 20th through Sunday, October 22nd. The location is the Crown Plaza Hotel. It's within a few blocks of LAX, situated on West Century Boulevard. John Mosby and Carmel McPherson of Highlander Worldwide are working with the hotel to get the hotel information out shortly. And we will pass along any new information as soon as we have it for you guys. But I know some people have been trying to get a hold of a hotel to make reservations. And hopefully by the time this episode comes out, that information will be ready to go. So if you have any inkling of going, go ahead and make your hotel reservation. Do it quickly because you know those blocks might sell out. Well, who knows? We'll see. So please check that out. Morten, did you have any information on the convention you wanted to update, or are you good there?
Not right now. I think we're still waiting for official posts from John and Carmel. I think they're still working out some deadlines and some specifics on those details. But
okay,
if you still feel like, well, the thing is, when you're going to order a block of rooms as they are trying to probably procure for this convention, you're going to get a nice discount. Now, if you want to get the room rate that they're going to get a discount for, wait for that room rate. But if you want to order a room right now, if you want to make sure that, you know, you're going to get a room there, I don't think that's, you know, I don't think that's unreasonable to do.
Yeah, it's going to cost you a little bit more. If you wait for the room block code, you'll probably save anywhere from $10 to $20 a night per room. Usually it falls around $10, but still $10 adds up for 4 days. It's $40, $50, depending on how long you're staying there. And when you are just, some suggestions, if you're planning on getting your hotel or your flights as well, I would kind of wait to see what is planned maybe prior to the convention, because there might be some meetups before that. People might want to try and do some stuff before the convention. You know, maybe some people involved with the convention might be hosting some classes or some trips or so. We'll never know, but just wait on the actual flights because if you do, maybe plan on coming a little bit earlier, like a day early and leave a day late or something like that, so you can have the opportunity to maximize the most fun out of this weekend.
Well, I can guarantee you that we're going to have a meetup for sure.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I mean, this is a big deal convention.
Yeah, we're probably targeting the Thursday night before the convention, because the convention is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So
yeah.
So keep that time slot open for your Blood of Kings fix there. So Norm, I've got a new segment that's going to kind of tie into things here. I'm calling it the Immortal Buzz. It's our hot button buzzworthy topics inspired by our Blood of Kings episodes and the Blood of Kings Facebook page.
Okay,
the
so
Immortal
hold on.
Buzz.
So we have the Immortal Buzz. Mike, insert Immortal Buzz sound effect here.
He loves that, doesn't
he? I know, yeah.
We'll have to have you do the Okay, Norm, I meant to bring this up at the last episode.
Yeah.
I was listening to the Highlander 3 retrospective and audio commentary that we did.
Yeah.
And you and I disagree on something, or I misinterpreted what you said, and I need to hash that out right now.
Okay.
I want to clarify what you think Nakano is. Nakano the Sorcerer.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Highlander 3, The Final Dimension, also known in other countries as the Sorcerer,
mm-hmm.
and in some cases the Final This and all that kind of stuff. But Nakano is referred to as the Sorcerer in the actual movie itself. And there was a couple times where we were talking about some of the tricks and things that when he was beheaded by Kane, the abilities and what he got out of the quickening from Nakano.
Mm-hmm.
And you kept referring to illusion, yeah. Illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted you to clarify that, because in my mind, yes, he has the power of illusion, but he's referred to as the Sorcerer. And there's some things that go on.
Referred
that
to by
me,
who as a Sorcerer?
Well, he's referred to by what's her name? And Connor. Nakano, in the beginning, when he's talking about, I made my way to the Sorcerer Nakano.
Okay.
The archaeologist, the beautiful Alex, she referred to him as the Sorcerer. So mm-hmm. the legend, I think even Kane said that as well in the beginning when he was plundering that village. He is known as the Sorcerer.
Okay.
And the movie was named in other countries as a Sorcerer.
Fair point.
So I want you to clarify whether or not you actually think he's a sorcerer, or if you think that he just has the power of illusion like a good magician would have. And the reason why I need you to clarify this is because I'm citing on the fact that he actually is a sorcerer, mm-hmm. because this would be the first time in Highlander lore before the during the TV series was going on, and there was the subplot of magic being introduced in the TV series with the Methuselah stones and all that kind of stuff. So, and we have to assume that there is a magical thing going on. If sure. you also want to say, refer to the first movie, it's a kind of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a saying, but maybe it's referring to something that actually exists. Mm-hmm. The quickening in Quickening 2, Highlander Quickening 2, that Connor and Ramirez are kind of doing. It's a kind of magic.
Sure.
Do you think Nakano is a sorcerer, as in magic, or do you think he's just an illusionist like a magician with a bag of tricks?
Well, I think this is one and the same thing, in my opinion, because sorcery is the definition of magic that can't be explained. You know, so illusion is the ability to be able to alter someone's perception, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has anything to do with any type of demonic entities or tapping into an energy that is otherworldly. Now, Highlander 2 is out there, so there is the aspect of Zeist, which at one time was out there. So, but I still think that when Nakano said specifically, "Take my head and you will gain all of my knowledge," and he puts his sword, or Connor's sword, up against his own neck, and he said, "Not even for the power of illusion." He said that specifically, mm-hmm. not for the power of sorcery. He said for the power of illusion. And what Nakano did in that cave had nothing to do with the powers that Kane inherited after his quickening. He didn't teleport. He didn't bend time or space. All he did was really create illusions.
Okay, so with the power that Kane got, obviously, from that, and he does teleport and he does do this stuff, and the wound that he had, and he is able to walk back into himself, you know, when he gets cut in half at the end battle. This type of stuff, this sorcery type stuff, do you think then there is some, even though based on what he said, do you think that he is an actual sorcerer?
It's possible, because we don't know what else Kane has in his melange of quickenings. You
right.
know, we don't know like what else he may have said, "You know what? I need Nakano's power to complete my repertoire of tricks." Because when he was cut in half, or when he changed from Alex Johnston into Kane, those are illusions.
Or right? morphed into Connor to fool Connor's son.
Right. So those are illusions. Those are abilities to be able to change somebody's perception, like he did with Three Card Monty, and, you know, being able to change into a bird or something like that. Okay, I can see those as being illusions. But being able to warp time and space, that is sorcery. That is, that's, it's tapping into a deeper, darker power. So I don't think that it was well-defined, but I think that what Nakano offered in his quickening was the ability to change perceptions, because that's all he really did. He changed the sword into a snake and back again.
So you don't think he passed on actual sorcery to Kane?
Not that I saw as evidence. Because when all things geeky, right, you have to rely on the evidence that's been presented. So when he said, "Not even for the power of illusion," when the snake was on the ground and it turned back into a sword, when he held up the sword or the snake or the staff and it turned into a sword again, those are all bending reality. That's illusion, right?
Okay.
That's like a magician saying, like, "What do I have in my hand? Do I have an ace of spades, or do I have a queen of hearts?"
See, I think then that's probably where you and I differ, because I think he did pass on the power of sorcery to Kane.
But what are the facts that you can prove as what you have seen to that effect?
To the things that Kane did, because he didn't teleport. There's no proof that he teleported before. he took Nakano's head.
But
that's
a huge leap of faith, though, from what you saw.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
You have in Highlander, though, you have to kind of go with, you know, assumption as well, because, you know, we did it in the last episode of whether or not we're assuming that the Kurgan took Asta's head, even though we're not entirely sure he did. You know, it's just little things like that, because Kane was searching out Nakano for this power. And it was obviously he had something different after he took his head. So
I know it could have been there, or more sorcery. Kane could have been, he could have been a sorcery or a magic junkie who was seeking out only immortals who would give him this kind of power.
Right.
So
right.
It doesn't mean that Kane doesn't have the ability to do that. It's just that what I saw, if we had to make an actual clinical debate about it, what I saw that Nakano was able to provide had nothing to do with black magic.
Right. Okay.
So that's all I'm saying.
All right, cool. Well, yeah. I appreciate the clarification. Mm-hmm. All right, one more thing I wanted to touch on, and this is based on our recent hot topic of the rules of the game, specifically the Holy Ground.
Mm-hmm.
When we had that episode post, Daniel Jacob Horan brought to our attention on Blood of Kings, after listening to the episode 29, Rules of the Game, regarding the effects of fighting on holy ground. In the Big Finish audiobook episode called Kurgan Rising, that audiobook deals directly with the effects of fighting on holy ground. Now, I'm not going to give away the whole plot of that, though, but I did want to tease this, though. While in Paris, villain Augusta Mason, for ulterior motives, tricked Duncan into killing his immortal friend of over 200 years, Bishop Justino Alvarez. However, just prior to his death, Bishop Justino was tricked into blessing Augusta's work in the building that Duncan was trapped in, thus consecrating the land and making it into holy ground. The effects of killing an immortal on holy ground were described as apocalyptic in this episode, i.e. there was earthquakes. And this is like mostly, this is all in like London and France area. Storms, the biggest in Europe in centuries. Riots and immortals banding together to fight against others, according to Dawson and the other fellow watchers. Duncan was unconscious for 2 days, which had never happened to him before as an immortal. And even the Pompeii was mentioned in this audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on that?
I think that it is a really good exploration of the interpretation of fighting on holy ground, because it's still not clearly defined as whether or not there are repercussions of fighting on holy ground. Now, we said before in the previous episode when we were discussing the comic book, because it is a licensed property, it has to be accepted as canon because it is licensed. It is not a fan film. It is not a fan entrepreneurial endeavor. So because this is a licensed property by Big Finished with Highlander as the license, we have to accept the fact that the exploration of what they're doing with Holy Ground must be canonized. I still think that there is a great deal of wiggle room when it comes to the interpretation of Holy Ground, but I can't give you a solid answer on whether or not I believe this interpretation was right or wrong. That's what interpretations are.
Yeah, the ulterior motive, I don't want to spoil because we may cover this on a future episode, was trying to get this to happen for a specific reason on holy ground. And it is very reminiscent of what had happened in Pompeii, and that Pompeii was used as that was a fight on holy ground, and that's how Pompeii happened. And the way this was described in there, and I listened to this thing like 3 or 4 times, and I had missed it the first time, or at least I didn't remember it. And so I'm glad he brought it up, because it got pretty epic of what happened and how it messed up Duncan. So it was interesting turn on that. And, you know, we had mentioned when we did the Samurai Secret of the Sword audiobook that we had both agreed that we accepted that as canon because of what you just said.
Yeah.
So it's if you have access to that that audiobook, please check that out. Norm and I are thinking about maybe covering that future episode down the line because it is a hot button topic of the interpretation of Holy Ground and how it becomes Holy Ground as well. So
oh, I think we definitely have to do that. And I can't stress enough how good, I mean, canon or not, these books are amazing.
Yeah, they are.
Right? And Adrian does a really good job. So does Toby Longworth. I mean, Toby Longworth does a really good job in doing kind of like the additional voices. But Adrian is so good. I mean, it's like he never leaves the character, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we are almost done with Joe's. You know what? One last thing we have to do, Norm. You know what we got to do,
We can leave anytime you want.
No, we can't leave just yet.
All right.
It is Norm's Immortal Challenge.
Mike pulled my fat out of the fire last one.
Yes, he did.
Big time.
So I'll let you guys tag team on this one. But this one, you're back solo.
Ugh.
All right, so here we go. This immortal was born in Wales. He first died in 1283 while defending his homeland against the forces of Edward I, King of England. Over the years, he fought repeatedly against the English. In later years, he sold his sword to the service of princes and rulers of the continent. This immortal eventually tired of all the killing and the violence of his life and retired to the monastery of Brother Paul, a fellow immortal who had established a sanctuary for men such as this immortal, so that they might finally rest and be safe for as long as they needed. This immortal also told his friend Duncan MacLeod of this place. MacLeod arrived finally at the monastery and asked immediately about this immortal, only to be told he had already left and was again traveling the world. It was later transpired that when this immortal left the monastery in the late summer of 1658, he was confronted by one of the monks, a brother, Antonius Calus, outside off of Holy Ground. Calus drew on him and took his head before this immortal realized he was in danger. This immortal had red hair, played a pipe,
okay,
sang a lot, and had a boisterous sense of humor. Who is this immortal?
It's the weirdest thing. You know, I was just thinking about this episode like recently. This is Song of the Executioner.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's the episode, yep. Yeah.
And as far as when you were actually reading this, I was like, okay, you were talking blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, it sounds like Calus. But then you said, you know, he was, you know, then you said Calus's name. I'm like, okay. But here's the strange thing. I don't know why I remember this name. I know this name. I'm just kind of like just deliberating. But when Duncan stepped into Brother Paul's monastery, the very first thing he said was, I was told of this place by Peter Hale.
Ding, 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 ding.
But he said it with such conviction. It's like, Peter Hale.
Right? Well played, sir. You got it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad I didn't go like, and so who is this immortal? And you're like, Peter Hale. Whatever, yeah. Dude. Let's move on.
it's one of those weird scenes that just kind of sticks in my head. Because we never saw Peter Hale, but then Duncan's like, well, he's and Duncan was like all grizzled, you know, and just drenched,
yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
We got to talk about Calus sometime, man.
Oh yes, we will.
Yeah, because David Robb is one of my favorite actors in Highlander and Downton Abbey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well done on the Immortal Challenge there. I think I'm just about done with my Philly cheesesteak and just finished up my black and tan. Mm-hmm. And looks like Joe's left. He's finished with his rehearsal, so it's good to go. You finished up? You done?
I'm going to smuggle this bottle out of Joe's. Let's go.
All right. Our main topic, Blood of Kings fan Vince Stefanelli's Highlander TV series fan pick, the episode Mortal Sins. Mortal Sins aired May 8th, 1995. It is the third season, episode 19. And, you know, when we like to do descriptions, Norm, you know where we like to go, right?
We would like to go to Fearful Symmetry from The Essential Guide to All Things Highlander from the great John Mosby.
Yes. I'm going to read Mortal Sins out of his book. written by Lawrence Shore, directed by Mario Azzopardi. A young immigrant is pursued through the Paris streets by a group of thugs, finally taking sanctuary in a church, when the gang's leader, Ernst Dahlmer, played by Andrew Woodall, follows them into the church. The priest, Father Bernard, is horrified to recognize him as a Nazi officer whom he presumed to have been dead for at least 50 years. Bernard also finds Duncan MacLeod, realizing that he is the same man he encountered and helped during the occupation of France in World War II when Bernard was just a boy. Now Bernard needs a favor from the man he knows to be immortal, to stop Dahlmer. Am I saying that right? Daimler?
Daimler.
Daimler.
Okay. Ernst Daimler, yes. Daimler, yes.
Ernst Daimler. But is killing their old enemy really God's work? Anne wonders why Duncan feels the need to put himself directly in harm's way by choice. But he reminds her that all that is needed for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And living through World War II taught him that in sharp detail. Anne also has something else to tell Duncan, news that has the potential to change his world forever. Now, when you first, when Vince first brought this up, what was your first impression?
I said, wow, I forgot about Mortal Sins. I forgot how good this episode really is. Because, first of all, I'm a big fan of anytime Highlander tackles World War II.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm a big fan of when Highlander tackles issues right on the nose, like white supremacy and racism. Because after Darius died, Adrian was in a bar, and then there were white supremacists that were in the bar that were kind of taunting him, and he just let them have it. White supremacy or not, you know, Duncan let them have it. But I thought that this was a really good episode, and I like what Vince said, that this isn't one of those Band of Brothers or Four Horsemen type episodes. This is an episode that's kind of like, it's on the fringe of like the best ofs. And if you haven't seen this episode, stop listening to us now, watch the episode, and then come back to us, because it really is probably one of the more poignant episodes when it comes to tackling a lot of what Highlander is all about. So, Vince, great recommendation. I commend you on this particular choice.
Yeah, I had to do a double take. I'm like, wait, which one is that one? And then I realized, yeah, that was the World War II one with the boy. Having to deal with the decision that he made and having his past come back to haunt him. And, of course, being filmed in France at the time, I always loved those episodes because you got some really great settings. And I remember, you know, whenever the Nazis can be bad guys in TV shows and movies, ever since I saw the original Indiana Jones, and then in the third film he goes, Nazis, I hate these guys. I'm like, I love seeing them as bad guys. Mm-hmm. So I thought first thing that we would do is touch on the special features, because there's some very interesting things that we hear from creative consultant David Abramowitz and producer Ken Gord.
Now, these are the special features on the DVD sets, yes?
Yes, the okay. special features on the DVD sets. David Abramowitz wanted to create a mortal character where an act of violence in his childhood reverberated throughout his life. So it was kind of neat that he was looking at not necessarily highlighting an immortal, because that's what Highlander is about, but mm-hmm. what happens to the mortals that support them. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. And then he said they needed to end the relationship with Dr. Anne Lindsay. They wanted to give her an out with dignity without killing her. They wanted her to see Duncan's quickening and his killing of an immortal, which led to one of her best lines. It was not because you killed him that I'm leaving. It's because I wanted you to kill him. I'm a doctor. I save lives. I don't take them. I can't start wanting to take lives. It was changing the core of who she was, and that she just could not have that. Mm-hmm. And David said that she felt that she delivered that line really well, and it was a really poignant movement. Did you want to mention something regarding that?
I think that she played that really, really well. I love Lisa Howard in this part. I always loved her as Dr. Anne Lindsay. And in the scene where Ernst Daimler backhands her and exacts violence upon her, the first thing I said was, the baby.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, yeah. I don't know how long she has been carrying this child, but long enough to have it weigh upon her and long enough for her to feel protective and obviously endangered when she is thrown to the ground by Ernst Daimler, by that violence. And there's just something about that scene where, like, you know what? It's so powerful.
Yeah, it is. It is. And she really dives into that script really well.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the character of Anne. I've always liked her. I always thought she was so pretty too.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just some episodes where they just didn't quite click, even though I thought that Anne, played by Lisa Howard, she did a great job doing that. Maybe she didn't have like the best writing to back her up, or maybe there just wasn't the chemistry between those two. But as a character, as a doctor, and you know, I thought that Lisa did a great job portraying that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the last part of the special features was probably one of the most interesting things: creative differences with director Mario Azzopardi. Producer Ken Gord referred in this episode as a firecracker of a show, specifically working with the director Mario, who he referred to as, quote, firecracker of a director. He is one of the best directors and knows how to tell a story, but he's very opinionated and a big personality. And David Abramowitz said, quote, Mario was a great director, but also a major pain in the ass. This is quote by David, uh-huh, as they fought over a number of things during production. Most famously was the wine spilling scene in the church, because director Mario wanted it to be white wine, but David wanted it to be red because it looked better on film.
Well, can I stop you there for a second?
Because, yeah, sure.
Okay, so when I was watching that scene, there were a lot of the traditions of Catholicism.
Yes.
In that particular consecration, you know, when you're doing the transmogrification of the body and blood in that particular part of the part of the, oh gosh, what do they call it? It's the sacrament of the Eucharist, and it is red wine. It's not white wine that's poured into a chalice. It's red wine. There's red wine that signifies the blood of Christ, and there's a slight addition of white wine into that, which is has to do with purity, I believe it is. But I'm glad they went with red wine, because technically that's correct.
Well, in this interview, David Abramowitz says that he wasn't even sure what they ended up using at the end. But when you listen to the audio or video, watch the video commentary, Gillian Horvath says that they ended up shooting it with white, but then in post they added the red to it.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, you know, Mario shot the way he felt it should be shot, but they changed it later in post.
Hmm.
Mario also took offense to the scene in which the priest had a gun in church, because his own brother was a priest in Malta and thought that would not have been anything any other priest would have done.
Yeah, but so, also not every single priest is dealing with what Bernard is dealing with.
This is true.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's be honest about
so,
that.
So, yeah. So as you can see, this led to this and many other disagreements led to many conversations becoming very heated. As Ken Gord said, became an international incident. In the end, however, David Abramowitz said, Mario did a wonderful job. And the bottom line, the episode really worked and that he would work with him again.
Yeah.
So that was interesting that you kind of know, because the bottom line is that did it produce a good product? And it did. So, and you mentioned earlier that maybe this is on the cusp of either the top five or the top 10. And Gillian, one of the main writers, she said this was in her top five. So this is definitely one of those episodes I would probably definitely put in the top 10, because it's really well done and well produced and well directed, and all the performances shine through in this. So let's hit on part two here, Norm. You said, mm-hmm, Father Bernard, the living prison of a guilty conscience.
Yeah.
Was Bernard justified? Bernard was just a child when he fought with the resistance and killed Daimler?
Daimler, yes. And that goes all the way back to what you said about what David Abramowitz said. He wanted to create a mortal character where an act of violence in his childhood reverberated throughout his life. This is Bernard. Now, Bernard was just a boy. You know, This is probably one of the best flashback sequences in Highlander, the TV series, maybe in Highlander in general, because
agreed,
it has to do with probably one of the greatest struggles of good versus evil, which is the Allies versus the Axis. In this case, the French Resistance versus the Nazis. The Nazis are the greatest evil that have ever plagued the Earth, and that's kind of like what we're getting at in this episode. But Bernard, I don't think they specified this in detail, but I can't believe that he was any more than 10 years old when he was working with the French Resistance, with Duncan and with the priests in that sanctuary. What he did to Daimler and what George Delu did to Daimler, what does that do to a person?
Yeah, it was almost kind of on instinct when you watch the episode, and the young actor George Janine, I think that's how you say his name, young Bernard, sells this completely, especially when he takes the pitchfork and pierces Daimler, and you see the shock in his face. And then Daimler's dying there, but Daimler's trying to choke this kid to death before he dies, and then all of a sudden then it kicks in and he dies. And seeing the shock on this kid's face really sees how it shapes him as an adult later in the future.
Yeah, I think that the juxtaposition of young George, of young Bernard, played by Georges Jeannin, and then the older George, you know, who is played by Roger Brett, right? They're so good in transitioning the guilt of what happened with young Bernard and what he did to Daimler, and the torture that older Bernard is putting himself through because of I'm just a mortal man.
Well, it's more what's scarring here for this young boy. It's more than just the actual act of killing this man, but then seeing when they put Daimler in the bag, the weighted bag would change to throw him in the Seine River. He comes back to life,
right?
And he says, "But he's still alive. He's still alive." And his friend says, "It doesn't matter now." And so he's putting this guy who's alive, drowning him to death. Like, this is what he's thinking. And so that, on top of that, has got to really scar him. So is he? You brought the question up. Is he cursed for his actions?
I think he believes he is, and I think that he would probably feel differently, or it probably would have affected him differently, if he buried at sea in the Seine a dead man. But, you know, Daimler was still, you know, he was still gasping at air, and he's like, "No, no, no, don't do this. Don't do this." And when he and George threw him into the Seine, you heard Daimler like, "Oh God, oh God, no. Oh God, no." Because he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
He knew. Now, here's an interesting thing. I'm going to sidetrack this for a second. In Highlander, the movie, immortals could not drown, i.e. when Ramirez dumped Connor into Glenfinnan, the Loch, you know, in Glenfinnan.
Loch Shiel.
And he didn't drown. He was kind of like swinging his sword and stuff like that. So that kind of immortality existed. Here, though, Daimler was dying every single time he revived, came back to life, and died more in the Seine until he was able to get himself out.
Did he reference, was that, how long was he doing that for, like 15 years, I think he referenced in the episode?
I think he said 50. Did he say 15?
I can't remember. I gotta go back. But yeah, but anyway, I can't imagine just coming back to life and then dying again underneath that. You know,
so
gosh,
but the thing is that, you know, like, a Daimler aside, which I'm fine with Nazis, you know, dying horrible deaths. That's fantastic. You know, but what it did to Bernard had to live with that all this time. And maybe that's why he decided to go into the priesthood, to see if he could find some kind of peace or atonement for what he did.
Yeah, it seems the likely cause of why he went there, and it was also a way of life that he had heard about and he had been part of. So, yeah, I think for something like that, because I can only imagine that haunting his dreams for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
but all very well acted by all parties, wouldn't you say? No one dialed this one in.
No, it was so powerful, and I think that's one thing that I think maybe fans forget about Mortal Sins is how good the performances were, because the way that older Bernard just felt the weight of his guilt of what he did was just, it was really a pleasure to watch. And when I say pleasure, it was because the acting was so good, seeing Bernard just have this cloud over him this entire time. I can't even imagine, you know, holding that kind of weight over the course of your entire lifetime. And here's the interesting thing. He's only a mortal holding this weight. Think about what an immortal would feel holding this kind of weight.
Yeah. Good question. So the next point, and this brought up another great thinking topic that immortals have to go through. Mm-hmm. The most Highlander moment in the episode, Duncan coming to terms that he has a chance at a normal life with Dr. Anne Lindsay. Now, I thought we'd have a little fun with this. Mm-hmm. Play the parts here. I'll say one role, you say that. Do you want to play Duncan MacLeod or Dr. Anne Lindsay?
I'll play Dr. Anne. I love Dr. Anne.
Okay, all right, okay. Cool. All right, you better play this good then, okay. All right? Okay, you ready? Mm-hmm. Okay. Duncan MacLeod starts. All my life, I've had to come to terms with the fact that I'm not supposed to have children. I've said it, and I've believed it. Now this happens, and I feel different. Like maybe there is a chance. Maybe my only chance.
Then what's the problem?
That the way my life is, someone may come for me and win.
Duncan, I might get hit by a bus tomorrow, or get some strange type of cancer, but I can't live my life that way. Nobody knows what's going to happen, Duncan. Nobody. Do you want a child?
Yes. Now, this really surprised me, Norm, when I first saw this, because he wants some normality, mm-hmm. I guess. He wants to be normal. He wants to have children. Mm-hmm. He can't. And I really like the fact that, first of all, they weren't writing off this character. They didn't want to kill her off. They didn't want her to have her run away. They wanted to face the issue, because to back up, and we touched on it, she is visiting him here in France and living with him on the barge, mm-hmm. and she. There's something wrong, and he senses it, and she confesses that she says that I'm pregnant. And she'd reconnected with someone, and she got pregnant, and then things didn't work out. And so Duncan's in the picture here, and this really gives Duncan something to think about, because he loves her,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And this brings up the question of can – if you think about it, this is an instant family for him now.
Yep.
You know? He knows that he can't have children because he's immortal, but she's now considering having him be the father. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those great things in Highlander, as you mentioned, a great Highlander moment that makes you think about this scenario.
Right.
You know. So what is your take on this? What was this subplot? Was it the subplot? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It was pretty strong if you think about it. Sometimes there's an A plot and a B plot. This is kind of like up there with the main A plot, if you ask me.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think that's why this episode is so strong, because the A plot and the B plot are kind of weighted the same, because you're dealing with the morality of the A plot, which is what Bernard's going through. But you're also dealing with a very, very powerful topic in Highlander. Can immortals have normal lives? Can the violence of the gathering allow them to have normal lives? And this is the great thing about season three, when Kallus killed Duncan, and you made the transition from Seacouver to Paris, Dr. Anne Lindsay was kind of in that nebulous space of where is she in the storytelling? Well, when Duncan died, she believed Duncan died. Even when Richie was pulling her out of the auditorium, even Richie knew, like, are you going to tell her? He's like, no, she's better off without me. she's better. Her life is better off without me being there. And it's like, Richie's like, are you sure? I mean, look what happened to Tessa. You told Tessa, right? So we're seeing this happen all over again, even though that she hasn't built the history that Tessa had with Duncan. It's somebody that actually was able to penetrate that hard exterior shield that Duncan had in his emotional state. Can I let somebody in? And Anne Lindsay was able to get in. But Duncan's like, he found it easier to let her go through a ruse of him dying. But he's like, you know what? She means too much to me. So I'm going to let her back in.
Yeah. And we'll touch on what happens with Anne's choice after the next topic here, because that's very poignant. But let's touch on the World War II connection with Highlander. You called it the Rachel factor.
Mm-hmm.
Dive into that for me.
Well, I have to reference the Rachel factor as being one of the scenes that was added into the director's cut of Highlander when the 10th anniversary was released in 1996. 1986 being the original theatrical release, 1996 being the 10th anniversary. And they added 5 specific scenes, one of which was, I like to call it the Master Race scene, where Connor McLeod was actually working with the French Resistance. And we did see this at one point in time in Highlander 3, because he was always working with revolutionaries. He was working with the resistance, and he was fighting Nazis, and a Nazi soldier, probably a stormtrooper, gunned him down in an abandoned warehouse, and Rachel was there. And he came back to life and gunned down the Nazis. Like, whatever you say, Jack, you're the master race. Right? And then right. He said to Rachel, like, how did you do this? How did you come back? And he goes, hey, it's a kind of magic. So World War II, a big part of at least 1986's story, told from the vantage point of Rachel, because that's when Connor met one of the great loves of his life, when it went from his daughter to somebody more significant, and then obviously someone who cared about him later on. I found that very similar when Duncan came back to life after ambushing Daimler's motorcade, and then young Bernard saw him come back to life. And Duncan was a little more brusque about it, but at the same time, though, he very well could have said, hey, it's a kind of magic.
Yeah. It's what's interesting about the... And we've seen the flashback to World War II before, that World War II was such an interesting time in the Highlander lore because it really defined immortals of who they were, because you could see some immortals siding with the Third Reich because they realized that, whoa, wait a minute, these guys are going for world domination. I want to be on this side. Mm-hmm. And yes, Hitler's in charge for now, but because I can't die, I'm going to basically ride the coattails and see what I can do. And then, of course, we've seen the flip side of it as well. And it's, I love how World War II is represented in the Highlander universe for that reason, because for me personally, I'm a huge fan of World War II movies. I grew up with my dad watching them, and I've got a plethora of World War II films, and I love the European theater stories and the action that you get out of that as well. Question here, the modern Reich. Mm-hmm. Is Daimler still a Nazi? Is he still the same person he was 50 years ago, or is the war really over? Well, you brought this question up in the notes, and if I was going to answer, I'd say, yeah, the dude's Nazi blood through and through, dude. He's just doing a different version of it right now with the white supremacists, you know, and mm-hmm. he's finding a way to do what he does best through the channel that may not be a party as big as he used to be part of, but this is something where he can find a way he can still control people and do it what, well, his racism he knows best.
Well, I have to tip my hat to Andrew Woodall. His performance as Ernst Daimler was fantastic. And I'm no linguistic experts, but I think that his accent was fantastic. I think his attitude about being a Nazi, you know, during the flashback sequences was fantastic. It reminded me of the way that Ralph Fiennes, you know, played his Nazi character in Schindler's List.
Oh, yeah.
There is a certain...
Especially during that scene at the church mm-hmm. where he's threatening to kill all the monks. Yes. And it reminds me of those many scenes that Rafe was where he's executing, you know, and his pistol's not working. Mm-hmm. He's trying to get it to work and because he's trying to take out, like, you know, six Jews with one shot,
exactly.
which is a horrific, horrific scene to watch. But it reminds me of that church scene in this Highlander episode.
Yeah, he's like, it's not, I'm not doing this. You're doing this.
Yeah, yeah, I love how he puts the responsibility on them.
Yeah. So I thought that he did
He
did a fantastic job, and I agree. I don't think that his stripes changed. I think once a Nazi, always a Nazi. And the dynamic changed for Duncan, because Duncan was a freedom fighter. He was part of the French Resistance. Daimler was a Nazi. Duncan's still a fighter for freedom. Not necessarily French Resistance, but he's the champion for good and for what is just and right and honorable. But Daimler is still like, you know what? I'm going to recruit the next generation of the Reich.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I think that in many cases, especially with the way that he threatened Bernard and threatened Anne at the end of the episode, he's still a Nazi.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I thought we would head on to the final port here, and we touched on a little bit regarding, can immortals live a normal life? Can immortals live normally once involved with immortals? Can mortals live normally once involved with immortals? And, of course, we saw this with Tess. Now, when it came to the character of Anne, there was probably some... Okay, when she left... I guess a lot of fans are upset with it, but it was probably maybe split down the middle. What would you say? You were watching these live at the time. I caught up on them a little bit later. So tell me where the fan community was regarding them writing Anne out of the show here.
Well, the thing is with Anne, and I think that's probably the same reaction a lot of the fans had with when Duncan found comfort with Annie Devlin. Anyone who supplanted Tessa as an emotional anchor for Duncan was scrutinized severely, with the exception maybe of Amanda, because Amanda was already established at the time. So right. when Duncan was finally able to accept somebody new in his life, i.e. Dr. Anne Lindsay, I think that it was hard for fans, including myself, to say, hey, you know what? What makes her so special? But you have to think about it in the broad strokes of what makes Highlander so impactful, is that Duncan just wants to live a normal human life. He wants to fall in love. He wants to be in love. He wants to have somebody to connect with. He wants to remove himself from the violence that is the game. However, if you involve a mortal in the game, you are involving them in the violence of your life. So it's not just that he doesn't want to expose himself. He doesn't want to expose her. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough choice there. And in the beginning of this episode where, you know, he's waking up in bed and he's serving her some coffee and food, and he's enjoying the normal life of having a girlfriend and someone that he likes and he loves, and something is afoot because you can tell of her attitude. But yeah, it's what's interesting when we said in the line reading earlier that he's afraid someone will come to him and win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's always a burden that every immortal is carrying. You know, can they live a normal life? Maybe they can delay it, you know, and have a normal life, but when it comes down to it, there's still the game, there's still the gathering, and there will always be people, there will always be immortals that will hunt others for the sport, for the prize, whatever it is.
Right.
Of course, you could take the Darius route and, you know, get Sanctuary. That didn't work out for him, obviously. So, yeah, can immortals live a normal life? If I were to answer that question, no.
Well, I think probably the most poignant scene about this was when Anne was subject to Daimler, both in that threatening scene in the church on holy ground, which he actually didn't exact any violence on Holy Ground in that scene. He kind of forced everyone off Holy Ground to do what he needed to do.
Yep.
And then him actually laying his hands on her in a very violent way and putting her child, her unborn child, at risk. I think that when, as a viewer, and I remember how I felt at this time, I'm like, oh, is the baby okay? That's how I felt.
Right, right.
But she can take a punch, but she fell to the ground. And I'm like, oh, gosh, is this going to cause her to miscarry? And I think that's what she was going through. I think that the writing was so strong. That's how I felt. But I think that's how they wanted us, the audience, to feel. And I think that Anne's reaction to that was pure. And when she says, like, kill him, you know, kill him for me. But she's a doctor. She can't say that. She could say that.
Which is why it frightened her, because it's not who she was.
Right.
And she wanted him to kill him, and she did not like the way that felt. You know, but her instincts kicked in. That motherly instinct kicks in when your child is threatened, and you're going to do whatever you can do to protect your child.
Right. I think I said kill her. Kill him. But yes, I think that was the point where the writing, if they wanted to write her off, and they did, that was the right moment, because she made a choice. She made a personal choice. I cannot be in this world of violence as a doctor who has dedicated herself and her profession to save lives. All lives.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I thought it was a very powerful scene. And keep in mind, too, I did want to mention that quickening. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty intense quickening. And I got to give it to Adrian, because Adrian really sells these quickenings. Mm-hmm. But this one, he really did. Maybe I was reading too much into it, but it almost kind of felt like he was getting this negative part of the quickening and he was fighting it, mm-hmm. because of the person that he killed.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, we've seen Duncan deal with dark quickenings before, but it looked like it was kicking his butt and he was trying to ride it out so he doesn't get consumed by it. Mm-hmm. I challenge our listeners to go back and watch that quickening.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense. And of course it's got the great pyrotechnics in the back, and you see the two statues break and fall, but you got to watch Duncan. Watch Adrian Paul sell it, because it's pretty intense.
Well,
I'd never really paid attention to that quickening because before as I did when I was getting ready for this episode, because I'm also realizing that Anne is watching this happen as well, and she's in shock.
Right. And I think it's the first time that she saw this kind of violence up close and personal. And you're right. The way that Adrian handled that is that it's almost as if he was absorbing the psychological trauma of what Daimler went through when he was drowned.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Because, you know, he had the chains and he beat George Dalou with those chains, because George and Bernard were the two people that were responsible for killing him several ways. But when Duncan was absorbing that quickening, it's a very good point that you brought up. He doesn't want it. He had to vanquish the enemy. Yes, that's what he does. But it means...
That actually brings up a really good question. If you take the head of someone you despise, or even someone you really, really annoy, you're like, great, now I got to put up with their quickening. Like, I would feel that way if I was an immortal and one of the Kardashians was an immortal and I took their head. I'd be like, I don't want their quickening. Oh, this is so annoying. Yeah. Hurry up, get over with. Ah!
You don't have the choice. Doesn't that suck?
Oh no, I just took Kanye's head. Right? No, I don't want his quickening. but at least he'll be dead. So,
but he's still in you somewhere. Doesn't that suck?
Yeah, I just had an epiphany on that.
Yeah.
Thinking like, because think about that bully that used to beat you up and how much you hated that bully. And then you have to live, you have to go through that quickening if you guys were both immortals.
Yeah.
Things that make you go, oh, geez. Well, Norm, look, before we wrap this up, you have some trivia on a particular character here.
I actually was really tickled when I saw or heard the name Georges Dalou, because we saw him first in the French underground when he was working with Bernard. You know, we saw him during the attack on Daimler's motorcade. And then we see him later on as an older man who still lives in Paris. He kind of looks like Don Corleone. You know, he has that kind of look. He's obviously well-connected, and he's part of the French underground. But this, listeners, is not the first time that we've seen Georges Delus. Georges Delus was actually seen the very first time in season one in the great Xavier introductory episode of For Tomorrow We Die. Now, if you remember, MacLeod traveled to Georges' chateau where he asked him if he recognized him at first, and then Georges is like, well, no, you must be his grandson or his son because you can't be the same Duncan MacLeod. And basically, Duncan was looking for a way to try and find some connection with a criminal element that would tie him to Xavier. And at that stage in their relationship, Duncan was like, no, my grandfather told me all about you and all of your adventures and escapades during the French resistance in World War II, right?
Yeah.
But in this episode, I found that it was a fantastic full circle episode because Duncan finally admitted to George that it was, in fact, him. And I think that it was really amazing. Now, Jean-Claude Doré as Georges Delus, he had such this great revelations like, it's you. And Duncan's like, yep, George, it's me. And he went from treating him from Duncan's like Duncan's son, Duncan's grandson, to Duncan himself. I thought that was just beautiful to watch because it's like, it is you. Remember when we used to do this? Remember when we used to do that? Because it is you. You know, and that's something that's special about Highlander. When you see those moments where you see the time collapse between characters.
Yeah.
And that was just beautifully portrayed by both Adrian and by Jean-Claude Doré.
Spot on, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts. Now, before we go into the final thoughts here, did I just admit to everyone that I'm not a fan of the Kardashians or Kanye?
You kind
of
did.
Okay, I'm fine with that. All right, Norm, your final thoughts. How do you feel about Mortal Sins?
Now, in watching this again, I forgot how good this was. And I really have to thank Vince for challenging us because thank you for pointing this out to us because, yes, we can go to fan favorites and look at The Samurai or look at Band of Brothers or look at The Four Horsemen or look at The Darkness. You know, those are great episodes. But I really do think...
Bad Day in Building A.
Of course, Bad Day in Building A is up there, The Zone. You know, The Zone being in the top 10. You know, this episode...
The immortal sarcasm.
The immortal Chamoli. It's a great look again at something that probably is overlooked a lot in the top 10 of Highlander, maybe in the top 5. This episode combines so many different aspects of what I believe makes a great quality Highlander episode. You have the moral dilemma. You have this great moral question of, am I doing the right thing? You have this great relationship, this question of the relationship between Anne and Duncan. Where can they go? What can they do? What's in their future? And then I think I have to go all the way back to, what does this do to a character like Bernard when he was a child? You know, he was a child, and he committed this atrocious, even though it was against a Nazi, it's still murder.
Yeah.
So you have all of this going on. What does it do to this person? What does it force him to become? And then you have all of this violence and how it is affecting the mortal world because of mortal activity. So I think that watching this again, it really challenges what we do here on Blood of Kings and how we look at these episodes. And even more importantly, Kevin, because we talked about this earlier on, how we look at these episodes from when we looked at them in 1995 to now. Literally,
95,
yeah, yep. So this is 22 years later. 95 to 2005, 2005 to 2015 to 17. That's 22 years later, we're watching this episode again, and we are different people than we were 22 years ago, as Duncan and Bernard were 50 years ago when they did what they did to Daimler.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to echo everything that you said. You're absolutely right. This is a very well-rounded episode. I remember watching the actor portraying Daimler, and I was reminded of the special features on was it Homeland, and that David Abramowitz really liked the episode, but he felt the villain did not pop.
Canwolf,
yeah. And I agreed to a certain point. He was right. But this one, yes, the villain was great. The supporting cast was great. And you had two very important plot points. Like I said, you don't have a plot A and a plot B. You've got plot A, plot A, B, you know? Mm-hmm. And having to write someone off of a show is a huge challenge. And I think that to do it right, I think they did write to this character of Anne. Because Lisa Howard did a great job portraying her. And yes, maybe there was something in the long run. The two characters didn't quite connect. But I thought it was great that they gave her a chance to go out the way she did. And they didn't pull the regular let's kill her off thing. Mm-hmm. Let's have her just disappear, not show up at all. And really give the actress, Lisa, something to chew on. And being a fan of that character myself, I thought that was a great way to do it. And so that was good. And just, of course, the whole World War II thing. Love it. You know, I could watch more stories of Highlander taking place during that time. And just beautifully shot, too. I love the sets. Love the costumes, too. I really got to give it to the set decorators and the costumers and the props and everything. I mean, being a fan of World War II, I'm also looking at how the Germans are dressed, and they did a really good job. Mm-hmm. And of course, the only thing that they don't do is they don't use the swastika, and that's for particular reasons, yeah. You know, because that offends a lot of people. So
the German investors. Remember, we had German investors that were happening at the time.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So, you know, they stick with the Iron Cross and stuff like that, which is still sells it. It's just, it's great. And it was in the audio commentary too, Gillian Horvath talks about how crazy the French stuntmen are as well and what they're willing to do and such. And so they touched on that as well. And so all these things just put together a really well-rounded episode. And as Abramowitz said, it paid off. I love this episode. I'm really grateful to Vince for bringing this up and challenging us with this one. But this does bring up a question that I touched on earlier. You know, we're going to be doing this again. We're going to be doing these fan picks down the line. And, you know, if we're going to have fun and really get into these episodes and do the audio commentary, it would also be kind of a challenge to have our fans pick what they think are the worst, or as David Abramowitz would say, the stinkers. And then we choose one and see if we can make it enjoyable.
Oh, I think that would be so much fun. I think that should be the next fan pick, like the stinkers.
So yeah, we'll look into that. Well, you know, we have this Kevin's Immortal Quickening Scale, mm-hmm. Norm. On a scale of 1 to 10... 10 being Mythos, 9 Darius, 8 Duncan, 7 Connor, 6 Xavier and Amanda. By the way, I decided to put Kurgan and Connor right next to each other at 7.
Sure.
5, we've got Luther and Fitz. 4, we've got Canis. 3, we've got the Immortal Chimoli. 2, we've got Michael Christian. And 1, we've got Katana. Where on the Immortals scale would you put this episode?
I place this at a very solid number 8 at a Duncan.
Okay. Yeah,
I really think that this episode is extraordinary. And I think that it is something that everybody should watch. And I may actually change this. I might make this go to 9. You know.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know what? Because here's the thing. It covers everything that I want in a Highlander episode. It covers a very severe moral quandary. It covers what it means to be an immortal. Can Can immortals love? Can they experience joy? Can they live normal lives? You know, is the gathering coming for them? There's so many aspects of the drama that I love about Highlander when Highlander does what it does best that are incorporated in this episode. So I'm probably somewhere between probably Duncan and Darius on this, probably an 8.5. I'd probably call that a Grayson.
It's funny you're saying that because I was going, yeah, I was going to go with Duncan, but you know what? I'm going to throw in half a cane too. So I'm going to give it a Duncan plus half a cane. And if an immortal were to have received his quickening, might have put it over, but yeah, I agree with everything that you said. It has so much that a Highlander fan, even new, you know, this is one of those episodes I think you would say to a newbie, mm-hmm. hey, if you're going to watch an episode, this is one you should watch, yeah. and here's why.
Yeah.
Because it covers all of this, you know. Yep. And yeah, I'd give it a good 8.5. I think that's good. Yep. Good Duncan, and yeah, I'll throw in a cane, half a cane. Maybe the top part just because he looked really cool, you know. Well, Norm, I'd like to again give a very special thanks to Mr. Vincent Stefanelli for his suggestion here for the Mortal Sins, for the first Highlander TV series fan pick episode. Mm-hmm. But you know what, Vince? We're not done with you yet. You know why, Norm?
Why?
Because the next episode of Blood of Kings, we're going to be doing the audio commentary for Mortal Sins.
There's still so much to say. So much to say.
Yes, there is. Yeah. And we're going to cover that next episode. So you thought you were getting one episode, bro? No, you're getting two.
Well, he did, in all fairness, he did ask, I would love for you to cover an episode the way that you covered the movies. So that's right. With a retrospective.
And we always do those in two parts.
Exactly, and so, a commentary. Yeah. So.
Yes. Well, Norm, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the commentary. But you know what? Mm-hmm. There's some other shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. And so we need to tease those.
Sure thing.
Quick little rewind for Blood of Kings, of course. Episode 29, we did the rules of the game, which brought a lot of discussion to the Blood of Kings fandom page there. Episode 30, we covered the IDW Highlander comic, The American Dream. Dude, that was a lot of fun. And I got to tell you, you and Mike were killing it with your trivia of your knowledge of the comic book industry, especially Mike talking about the behind the scenes and why things may have been done. That was really cool having you guys go down memory lane, remembering him teaching you and the projects that you were doing.
Yeah, well, Mike is a 30-year veteran of comics. He's a professional, and believe me, I mean, he has seen so many different styles and so many different artists, and you know, his expertise is invaluable to us, especially discussing comics.
Well, two things I brought out of that was nothing beats the smell of a real comic book when you open it. None of this digital stuff that you guys were only working
on. I got my copies in the mail.
And I'm still putting that challenge out to Mike to change his Twitter name to the Immortal Chamoli. I still got $20 with his name on it.
True.
Also, we have Culture Clash going on. We had the John Wick 2 reaction show. We had a lot of fun diving deep into the world of Wick. We have the Academy Awards after show coming up as well, where we talk about what happened there.
I'm pretty sure that you guys only chose one winner for Best Picture.
Yes, right? We only chose one winner. And, of course, we have our updates of the Star Wars Celebration Countdown with Matthew Clifton. And we did a really cool tribute to one of our favorite actors who recently passed away, Mr. Bill Paxton. Mm-hmm. It was a little tough to get through, but we did, and I think we did a good job celebrating all the wonderful parts he did, Norm.
Absolutely. It was a great show. I was glad to be a part of it, and hashtag game over, man.
That's right. That's right. Got so many good quotes that guy has. Mm-hmm. Ugh. For the Couch Potato Theater, there was a retrospective for The Black Hole that Davis and Kyle did, but we just recorded the newest one for Tron. We did a retrospective episode covering all of the Tron movies, and we had a guest, John Mills, come in later for the audio commentary.
Cool.
For the first Tron.
Okay.
So Davis, Kyle, and I talk about the original Tron, the sequel. We touch on the animated series as well. We touch on the video games, which was a big part of my life, yeah. and also the toys. And then we did the Tron, original Tron commentary. We had John Mills come on, and we're planning on doing the commentary for the sequel. Cool, cool, cool. So we're really excited about that.
Ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-da-da-dun, da-da-da-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, da-da-da-dun. Right?
Yeah.
Well played, sir. So good. On the Time Warp, coming out very shortly, we've been teasing this for a while, we have the lost TV shows of the 80s. And I got stumped on a few there, and then, of course, there are several of our favorites. And, of course, in May, we're targeting 1987 movies. Ooh. 30 years later.
You put a deadline on that, huh?
Yes, yeah, we're targeting May for that, and we're going to have Aaron, friend of the show, back on there, guest starring on that as well, because it was because of her.
Yeah, it was kind
of
her idea.
Challenging right? us yeah. to look at 1987, because we were like, ooh, 1986, the best year of movies ever, and then we started looking at 87 going, we better do that one too.
Well, here's, to put things into perspective, best movie, highest grossing movie of 1986, Top Gun. Highest grossing movie of 1987, Three Men and a Baby. You decide.
Weird, yeah.
Right.
But then there were so many good movies that came out in 87.
I know.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So all of these awesome shows can be found on the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for you Android users. Instagram, you can find the on Fandom Podcast Network, and also you can find Blood of Kings. Blood of Kings Pod. On Facebook, of course, as we mentioned, we hit a milestone, 1,000 members. Check the Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom page on Facebook. Oh, that's just, I can't believe I'm saying
unreal.
That.
Unreal. So cool. Unreal. Yeah.
Oh, so, so cool. And we also have another awesome Facebook group getting some recent activity as well. Blood of Kings Highlander, the CCG collectible card game page. We've having some activity on there about tournaments that's going on. And we've been mentioning this game on and off all year long. If you want to know what this is about, Norm, this is where they go, right?
So I'm trying to have Stephen Philip Rice and James Richards create something special for the 25th anniversary celebration. I want them to create a 2-pack starter deck of Michael Christian versus the Immortal Chamoli, a Blood of Kings exclusive. And I actually have a rule set. I have a rule set for that convention.
What's the rule set?
The rule set, I'm going to borrow something that I did in 1998 when we did it with TCG, Thunder Castle Games. If you check in and get you're only going to be able to buy this from our booth, okay? If you check in and buy the Michael Christian versus Immortal Chamoli starter deck set and then get your specific sticker that you will put on your lanyard or your lanyard pass anywhere aside from the bathrooms or an actual panel where you are challenged with another immortal wearing the same sticker, you have to fight them.
Ooh.
Immediately if a challenge is demanded of you. And then you will record your fight and then bring them into us, and then we will have a special prize for them. That's how they handled it in 1998. I would definitely love to do that format again for the 25th anniversary.
Card idea, I would love to have a special pregame card be the lead pipe.
That is. That was my idea.
Where it dodges like everything for like a turn or two. That would be awesome.
Oh, it'll be improvised weapon, iron pipe. The thing is that you can't perform power blows and you can't take heads, but that is an automatic weapon of choice for
nice.
That deck.
Can they use the image of the one that's hanging up next to my Bokens?
We'll talk to those guys about that. But I really want those guys to think about maybe making that set for us, limited edition for the 25th anniversary convention. I think that would be hilarious.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, if you would like to contact us here on Blood of Kings, we love emails, and we will read your email if you do so. Please, please contact us by emailing us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. Also, please follow us on Twitter and tag us there as well, at Blood of Kings Pod. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, @Spartan_Phoenix. Norm, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at the Three Seashells. I'm just kidding. I not get you.
Got me.
Because you're Spartan_Phoenix. No, you can find me at Starfighter 1701. And maybe, Kevin, maybe you and I will let our listeners know how the three seashells work.
Oh, yes. I figured one of them out, but I'm not spilling the beans on that one. Not yet. Okay, Mike can be found in the Immortal Chamoli. Just kidding. Mike can be found at MSELLCNL. One day.
$20. $20.
Please leave us a review on iTunes so new fans can find us easier. And, of course, we love 5-star reviews, but any feedback on these reviews would be great because, you know, more people will be able to find us with more reviews. We'll get up there in the radar. And if you leave a review, we will read it here on Blood of Kings. And, you know, I know Norm likes that. We like that. And that just makes our day. Right, Norm?
Absolutely. We love reviews. And you know what, Kev? People love contests.
Uh-oh.
People love contests. So
uh-oh.
I think there,
oh, I smell something.
There are going to be some contests in our near future. And I think that soon we will be revealing our new T-shirt for Blood of Kings. And one of these 5-star reviews, that's very presumptuous of me, one of these reviews will win themselves an official 2017 Blood of Kings Season 2 T-shirt.
So what you're saying is that 1-star review that says, I can't believe you dissed the Kardashians, mm-hmm. might be in the running for a 2017 Blood of Kings T-shirt?
Well, we are on our way to 5-star reviews until you started the Kardashian bashing. The Kardashian. The Kardash bash, if you will. Thanks so much, Kev.
So good. Well, I just want to say again, I'm really excited. We are at 1,000 members on Facebook. Really appreciate. Again, thank you all on Blood of Kings. I say it every week, and I say it sincerely, and I know Norm feels the same. We love the activity, especially some of the new members that have arrived and introduced themselves and thrown something out there to talk about. And Norm and I do our best to interact with you guys, and we really appreciate everyone interacting with each other, and it just makes for a wonderful, wonderful community. Right, Norm?
Absolutely. Community is what this is all about. And when Kevin and I started the Blood of Kings fan page on Facebook, I think it was like you and me and, like, I don't know, like people that we paid.
Cat Cedar.
Cats. That's right. But it's turned out to be a very fantastic community, a lot of fans. I'm glad that there are this many fans that still love Highlander. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and we're going to get new fans too. So this is really cool. I'm really excited for the future of Blood of Kings and just for the fandom of Highlander in general.
Yep.
Well, on behalf of my co-host Norman, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings. Norm, that sensation you are feeling is a quickening. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.